Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record, program number 1006, Robert Mueller and the Subversion of Operation Green Quest. This is being recorded on May 2nd of the year 2018. This program is something of a prequel to the next program. It may be the next two programs, because I'm going to be doing a deep dive into some of the aspects of the Russiagate PSYOP that are absolutely pivotal and yet that are at the same time going to be very cumbersome and difficult to deal with. It may be very, very difficult indeed to deal with. We're going to be talking about a lot of things that are unfamiliar to most people. We're going to be talking about the House of Habsburg. That is the royal family of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. And we very specifically are going to be talking about a subsidiary element of the House of Habsburg, and that is the House of Liechtenstein. Liechtenstein is a tiny country in Europe. Its overall population is 32,000 people. It is governed by a monarch. Last time I checked was Prince Hans Adam, who for a time became the only absolute monarch in all of Europe. The House of Liechtenstein is a subsidiary of the House of Habsburg. In other words, the monarch of Liechtenstein is a member of the, or an associate, really a subsidiary functionary of the House of Habsburg, the royal family that governed the Austro-Hungarian Empire for roughly 600 years. When Robert Mueller, or Mother, most people call him, I call him Mueller, that is how his name is spelled, and because of the fact that he has basically covered up some really important investigations over the decades, investigations which, if they had been properly conducted, would have not only shed light on some very important dynamics, but would have brought a halt to some terrible ongoing things like U.S. involvement in international terrorism, involvement of elements of our intelligence services in drug trafficking, the murder of many people, including American citizens and American service personnel, and a whole lot of really nasty things, the September 11th attacks. I call him Mueller. He actually does bear a superficial resemblance to Heinrich Mueller, the head of the Gestapo, the security coordinator for the remarkable and deadly Bormann Flight Capital Organization, and someone who can credibly be documented as having gone to work in some capacity for U.S. intelligence after World War II. I wondered when Mueller was made head of the, well, really it's the Russiagate PSYOP. He was appointed special prosecutor. He is a very special prosecutor indeed. And in that very special prosecutorial, but that belongs in quotes, quote, prosecutorial, unquote, role, he has covered up covert operations for decades, beginning with aspects of the Iran-Contra affair, the prosecution of Panamanian strongman Manuel Noriega, a U.S. intelligence-installed dictator in Panama who worked for drug trafficking elements associated with CIA and other intelligence networks for the U.S. He eventually turned on the U.S. and was removed for his trouble. Mueller also covered up the circumstances concerning the bombing of Pan Am 103, and most importantly, the BCCI investigation. Had the Bank of Credit and Commerce International been properly investigated, Wags called it the Bank of Crooks and Criminals International, it would have revealed complicity of elements of U.S. intelligence with drug trafficking and international terrorism. Oliver North used the BCCI for some of his machinations in the Iran-Contra scandal. Perhaps most importantly for our purposes, the BCCI milieu also embraced people like Salem bin Laden, Osama bin Laden's brother, people like James R. Bath, who handled some air companies, air subsidiaries, or proprietary air companies that were linked with U.S. intelligence and the Iran-Contra affair, and that tracked back to the bin Laden family in part. Bath was the business agent for the bin Laden family and may very well have channeled money from the bin Laden family to what was originally Arbusto Energy, and that eventually morphed into Harkin Energy. That was George W. Bush's first oil venture. I noted in For the Record program number 310 from July of 2001, several months before the September 11th attacks, that in my opinion, Mueller had been appointed head of the FBI in order to see to it that the links between bin Laden and the genesis of George, or the bin Laden family and the genesis of George W. Bush's energy ventures would not come to light. Basically, he was there as something of a gatekeeper. Mueller is a very important historical figure, and in my opinion, his presence as the Russiagate, quote, special prosecutor, unquote, is once again to keep the lid on a number of overlapping intelligence nexuses that would go back, or maybe nexi would be the plural, that track back at one level to September 11th, and through that all the way back to the Iran-Contra affair, the drug dealing, the terrorist links, and others. I'm going to do the best I can in this program to highlight some of the September 11th links to the September 11th attack links to this history. It may not work altogether because, again, we're going to be talking about a lot of things. This is going to be quite a bicycle ride. Suffice it to say that when one unravels the complicated and up to a point obfuscated links to things like the Alpha conglomerate, to the aforementioned principality of Liechtenstein, and to what we are told was a, quote, Russian conspiracy to influence our elections, and what actually appears to have been an anti-Russian, pro-EU operation in order to get Ukraine into the Western orbit. Ukraine is one of the largest and most important of the former republics of the Soviet Union. The Western Ukraine, or Galicia, G-A-L-I-C-I-A, was part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. And in the next show, or perhaps the next two shows, we're going to take a look at links between the House of Habsburg and Ukraine. Again, bear in mind, Liechtenstein, we're going to be accessing information from For the Record 530, For the Record 536, and For the Record 573 in our next program or two. Again, it is going to be quite a bicycle ride, but I think by way of entry into this admittedly very complex and yet consummately important series of relationships, taking a look at the history of Robert Mueller. Again, a very important historical figure. I don't think that the history of the late 20th and early 21st century would actually be complete without a serious deep dive into the operations of Robert Mueller. We're going to at least superficially do that in this program. Now, we're going to begin, as I said, by excerpting For the Record, program number 310. And in that, this was from early July of 2001. And I know that Robert Mueller's role in the Justice Department in helping to attenuate the investigations into BCCI, into the bombing of Pan Am 103, and the situation of Manuel Noriega, had they been investigated and publicized to a greater extent, some of the links between elements of U.S. intelligence and drug dealing, terrorism, and various things would have come out. And the links between, again, the Bush family, George W. Bush's early energy ventures, and the Bin Laden family would have come out as well. Now, I did this program when Robert Mueller was originally seen as a probable appointee by George W. Bush to head up the FBI. He eventually did head up the FBI, and that was the context of the discussion. This is from For the Record 310 from July 8th of 2001.
The following is from the San Francisco Chronicle of Friday, July 6th of the year 2001. This is a Chronicle story by Zachary Coyle, C-O-I-L-E, and Bob Egelko, or Egelko, E-G-E-L-K-O. Its headline, SF Prosecutor Mueller Picked to Lead FBI and Mend Its Image. And in a sidebar to this article, there's discussion of some of the top cases that Mueller oversaw. It reads, while he was head of the Justice Department's criminal division, Robert S. Mueller III oversaw several high-profile matters. The prosecution of Panamanian strongman Manuel Noriega on drug charges, the inquiry into the 1988 bombing of Pan Am Flight 103 over Lockerbie, Scotland, and the BCCI investigation, a huge international fraud case. Three of these, the three that I just named, impinge directly not only on the Iran-Contra scandal, but also on the overlapping Iraqgate scandal. And one of the things that's significant about these cases is that had they been investigated to the full, to the extent that they might have, these almost certainly would have brought down George Bush, certainly led to his impeachment, if not his ultimate conviction on criminal charges. The lead paragraph of this story, by the way, reads, President Bush tapped Robert S. Mueller III, the U.S. attorney in San Francisco, as the new director of the FBI yesterday, seeking a no-nonsense manager to repair the image of an agency accused of botching several recent high-profile cases. And we're going to chat about BCCI in a minute. More about the BCCI case, this from an article in the Chronicle the preceding day. This is from Tuesday, actually 2 days early. This is from the San Francisco Chronicle of Tuesday, July 3rd of the year 2001. This is an article by Stacy Finns, F-I-N-Z, of the Chronicle. It's headlined, In the Running for FBI Director, subtitled, Bush Considers Low-Key SF Federal Prosecutor for Job. And of the BCCI investigation, by the way, the BCCI was called the Bank of Credit, was the abbreviation for an institution called the Bank of Credit and Commerce International. This was nicknamed the Bank for Crooks and crooks and something else. Anyway, WAGS gave it a different name. BCCI was heavily involved not only with some of the funding of the Iran-Contra scandal, but also served as a vehicle for the repository of drug money and also for the funds used by various terrorist groups as well. Again, it was deeply involved, and the BCCI was deeply involved in the Iran-Contra scandal. Oliver North used an account with BCCI for many of his machinations. And BCCI is an institution with, as I like to say, more connections than a switchboard. More about BCCI in a minute. Skipping down in this story, from Boston, Mueller went to Washington, D.C., where he served as the head of the Justice Department's criminal division in George Bush's administration. It was there that he oversaw the prosecutions of Noriega and headed up investigation of the Bank of Credit and Commerce International scandal, a huge fraud case in which people throughout the Third World lost their life savings. By the time the BCCI probe picked up steam, several Washington power brokers were implicated, and allegations surfaced that the Justice Department was balking at the investigation because of alleged CIA links. By the way, those alleged CIA links are they're a matter of public record. Continuing, then-Representative Charles Schumer, Democrat of New York, fired off a report critical of the Justice Department's treatment of the case, saying the failure to pursue wrongdoing might be because too many prominent politicians had connections to BCCI. Quote, there is possibly a cover-up or a conspiracy, unquote, Schumer, now a U.S. senator, said in 1991. Again quoting, but it is also a 50% chance that it was just ineptitude, a failure to go after white-collar crime. Well, I suspect that there was a whole lot more to it than that. Again, BCCI was centrally involved in the Iran-Contra affair. It was one of the many connections that would have undoubtedly led back to the elder George Bush, who was not only was in the loop, but was the main orchestrator of the Iran-Contra affair. The vehicle for realizing the Iran-Contra and Iraq aid machinations were the intergovernmental agency networks that were put together pursuant to the President's Task Force on Combat, the Vice President's Task Force on Combating Terrorism, that was headed up by George Bush, and the networks that were created out of the recommendations that that task force put together were utilized by George Bush as sort of his own private intelligence service. They were the main vehicle for the realizing of both the Iran-Contra machinations and the Iraq aid machinations, and had the BCCI affair been properly investigated, it would have gone back to the elder George Bush. It also, as we're going to talk about in a minute, might have very well gone forward and tarred the current George Bush, George II, with the very same brush. I would note in a couple of different For the Record programs, For the Record program 249 and also in number 228, I went into a meeting that took place in July of 1986 between George Bush, that's the elder George Bush, and Amiram Nir Nisker, and also military intelligence agent Charles McKee, who was in charge of a group of U.S. military intelligence operatives who were in the Middle East looking to free the hostages that had been held as part of the imbroglio in the Iran-Contra affair. The McKee team died in the bombing of Pan Am 103, and indeed it has been established that the U.S. State Department had advance warning that a Pan Am plane was going to be blown up, and indeed the evidence in the bombing of Pan Am 103 not only does not point exclusively to Libya, but the larger view of the investigation points in the direction of Manzer al-Qassar, a Syrian terrorist and weapons trafficker who was a main operative in the Iran-Contra affair, and who was alleged by the Pan Am 103 insurance investigators report to have been the principal executor of the Pan Am 103 bombing. That Pan Am insurance investigators report also alleges that the handlers for Manzer al-Qassar had advance warning that the bomb was going to go off and that they deliberately prevented the flight from being canceled and therefore bore responsibility for the bombing of Pan Am 103 and the elimination of the McKee team, who were alleged by the insurance investigators report to have come across the connections between the Iran-Contra players and Manzer al-Qassar. I believe it was Oliver Buck Revell's son. Oliver Revell was a former FBI official also involved with the investigations of Iran-Contra, and some would maintain that he helped to attenuate some of those investigations. But Revell's son, I believe, was going to be on Pan Am 103. He was one of a number of people who was able to cancel his seat on that particular flight. The McKee team were not so lucky, and again, it is alleged in the Pan Am insurance investigators report that the McKee team had come across the connections between Manzer al-Qassar and the Iran-Contra player, and that they were headed back to the United States to, among other things, blow the whistle on that particular connection. It's been established and again discussed in For the Record 228 and 249 that George Bush was in a meeting at the King David Hotel in Jerusalem in July of 1986, at which the aforementioned Charles McKee and also Amiram Nir Nisker, one of the Israeli players, in the Iran-Contra affair, discussed some of the machinations. Lawrence Walsh, the aforementioned Iran-Contra special prosecutor, was interested in investigating this particular meeting. It was one of the areas of stonewalling that helped to frustrate his investigation. And again, had that particular meeting been properly investigated, it might very well have led to the impeachment, perhaps even the criminal conviction, of the elder George Bush. Certainly, Charles McKee was present at that meeting, and his death in Pan Am 103, or on the Pan Am 103 flight, precluded any testimony that he might have given either about that meeting or about the alleged discovery of the Manzur El-Kassar Iran-Contra connection. Manuel Noriega's involvement with Iran-Contra and with the Bush milieu, the elder George Bush milieu, is a matter of public record. And one of the things that's interesting about the BCCI connection is that one of the people involved with the milieu of the BCCI was a fellow named James R. Bath, who, by his own account, allegedly was recruited by the elder George Bush into the Central Intelligence Agency and assigned to babysit some very wealthy Saudi Arabian clients. James R. Bath put up approximately 5% of the working capital that went to found Arbusto Energy, George Bush's first oil company. That's George II, W's first oil company. And as we've discussed in numerous broadcasts for the record program number 256, the aforementioned number 277, broadcast number 249, and for the record program number 186, the acquaintances of James R. Bath at the time said that he had very little money of his own, so in all probability, the capital that went to found, that portion of the capital that went to found Arbusto Energy probably came from James R. Bath's wealthy Saudi Arabian clients, who included the Bin Laden family, because James R. Bath was the Texas business representative for the Bin Laden family. Osama Bin Laden is the terrorist extraordinaire, and his operatives are alleged to have executed the bombing of the destroyer Cole during the course of the campaign last fall, and the bombing of the destroyer Cole was among the factors that helped to make the Clinton administration and, by extension, Al Gore look weak, soft on terrorism, incapable of dealing with these Middle Eastern Islamic fanatics who were raising hell with American lives at the same time as the price of oil was going up. Essentially the same double bind that we saw in the year 2000, when a combination of rising oil prices, resulting inflation and economic hardship, and the seeming impotence of the United States in the face of the Islamic militants in Iran and the taking of the hostages helped to send Jimmy Carter's presidency to the happy hunting ground. One of the interesting things about the BCCI connection is that had it been properly investigated, it might very well have gone to James R. Bath, revealing his business connections with the Bin Laden family, and ultimately it could have seen to it that George W. would have been blocked from reaching the heady heights that he currently occupies. Of course, George W. is currently a heartbeat away from the presidency. Feeble heartbeat under the circumstances, that of course being Dick Cheney. Again, I would note that Bill Clinton took a lot of heat for pardoning Mark Rich. In the aforementioned For the Record program number 277, there's discussion of the fact that the Senate Foreign Relations Committee's report on the BCCI listed as among the points to be investigated Mark Rich's use of agricultural credits in the 1980s through BCCI. Agricultural credits were the main vehicle for accomplishing the funding of Iraq, that funding of the weaponry that Saddam Hussein came into possession of, one of the major factors, the central element in the BNL or Iraqgate scandal, also overseen by the elder George Bush.
That again from For the Record 310, that was recorded in early July of 2001, the program titled Bush League. Note again the past history of Robert Mueller in helping to attenuate the investigations into Noriega, into Pan Am 103, and most importantly into BCCI, covering up not only U.S. intel links to drug trafficking, but also terrorism. And in the case of BCCI, we would see some of the key elements linking the Bin Laden family to the early Energy Ventures of George W. Bush, the seated president, in July of 2001. Now, following the September 11th attacks, there was a raid on a number of overlapping Muslim charities and businesses on March 20th of 2002. This was called Operation Green Quest. Treasury Department agents associated with the Secret Service and also FBI personnel raided these charities, again, for being involved in the financing of not only Al-Qaeda, but also Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad. Much of the legwork on this was done by John Loftus, and yet the investigation was covered up. Central to our, for our purposes here, well, these are some very important and complex links. One of the things that I wrestle with in doing present analysis is the fact that so much of this involves things from the past that are quite complicated and lengthy. I can only refer listeners to some of the earlier programs, such as, for the record, 356, which you are going to hear excerpted right now. There was a very important article in the Wall Street Journal of April 18th of 2002 by Glenn R. Simpson and Roger Thurow called O'Neill, that's Paul O'Neill, the then Secretary of the Treasury. The Treasury Department is in charge of the Secret Service, which handled much of the legwork for the Operation Green Quest raids. O'Neill met Muslim activists tied to charities. This entailed a fellow named Talat Osman, who was the managing director of Grover Norquist's Islamic Free Market Institute and who was a member of the board of directors of Harkin Energy, one of George W. Bush's energy ventures. He gave a Muslim benediction at the Republican convention and was a friend of and political advisor for both Georges Bush. He interceded with then Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill on April 4th of 2002 on behalf of the individuals and institutions targeted by the Operation Green Quest raids. O'Neill was fired some months later in December of 2002. The investigation was swept under the rug. The charities, many of them anyway, were set up by a Pakistani national named, or originally a Pakistani national named Yaqub Mirza, who had a very close connection to the FBI, which at this point in time was headed up by Robert Mueller. Mirza was also involved with Amana Mutual Funds Trust, which was a business venture that he and others had with Nicholas Kaiser, or Nick Kaiser, of the famous Bay Area industrial family, the Kaisers, as in Kaiser Permanente. One of the central elements in the Operation Green Quest raids was the bank Altaqua. That was incorporated along with associated firms in the country of Liechtenstein. Again, 32,000 citizens. It basically is a lean, mean, vertically integrated money laundering machine. But Liechtenstein is the country in which the bank Altaqua, the ASAT Trust, Nasruddin Industries, and the complex of Altaqua was incorporated. It was headed up by Youssef Naba, who was, in, according to the Egyptian intelligence service, a German intelligence officer agent during the Second World War. The driving force behind the Bank Altaqua was François Genoux, a key Nazi intelligence officer and the heir to the political last will and testament and collected literary works of Adolf Hitler, Martin Bormann, and Joseph Goebbels. a friend of protege of and attorney for François Genoux, a fellow named Baldin Dunon, was the chairman of the board of SICO, that's S-I-C-O, the Saudi investment company that was the Swiss-based holding company for the very lucrative properties of the bin Laden family. The aforementioned François Genoux, again the driving force behind the founding of the Bank Al-Taqwa, again the head of the heir to the political last will and testament. Again, the political last will and testament of Adolf Hitler, Martin Bormann, and Joseph Goebbels was also a financial advisor to the bin Laden family. The Bank Al-Taqwa had an unlimited line of credit for Al-Qaeda, and that bank account was headed up by a guy named Ali bin Musalim, who, after this became public, was found dead in his Geneva, Switzerland apartment. Bin Musalim, as we saw in For the Record 513, was under indictment in the U.S. in 1983 for an attempt at gaining a monopoly over the silver market. That places him in league with Nelson Bunker Hunt of the famous ultra-right-wing Texas oil family, and Nelson Bunker Hunt, a player in the Iran-Contra affair, among other things. I would note that SICO's their subsidiary called Avcon, A-V-C-O-N, sent pilots for training down to Tiny Huffman Aviation in Venice, Florida, that was headed up by Rudy Deckers and owned by Wally Hilliard, inextricably linked with elements of U.S. intelligence and drug trafficking. There are evidentiary tributaries from Huffman Aviation leading back to the operations of Barry Seal and the Iran-Contra affair. Mohammed Atta is somebody we are going to talk about. And again, I realize this is a tall glass of water to drink at one sitting. I can only refer people to the actual articles and the other programs, because again, we're going to be going back to Liechtenstein, the House of Habsburg. We're going to take a look at the Alpha Bank, or the Alpha Conglomerate, which is associated with the nexus of the Karl Duisberg Gesellschaft, or Karl Duisberg Society. This, however, we'll talk about later in this program. It will probably take two shows to go into the Russiagate PSYOP and the many links going in the direction of September 11th. Alpha Bank, the Underground Reich, Liechtenstein, the House of Habsburg, and really so much of what, quote, Russiagate, unquote, is all about is Ukraine. So this is going to be quite a bicycle ride. However, let's go back to, For the Record, 356. This was done in the late spring of 2002. Late spring of 2002. For the Record, 356.
This is from the Wall Street Journal of Thursday, April 18th of 2002. An article by Glenn R. Simpson headlined, O'Neill Met Muslim Activists Tied to Charities. And this will bring this whole connection much, much closer. 2 weeks after his agents raided the offices of several Islamic charities and businesses suspected of financing terrorism, Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill met with two politically connected Muslim activists, one a longtime Bush family associate, who each had a tie to the targeted groups. The April 4th luncheon with Mr. O'Neill was convened to allow Muslim Americans to voice complaints about the March 20th raid on the International Institute for Islamic Thought and 19 related entities that operate out of offices at 555 Grove Street in Herndon, Virginia, a Washington suburb. Among the Muslim leaders attending was Talat Othman, O-T-H-M-A-N, a longtime associate and supporter of President Bush's family, who gave a benediction at the Republican National Convention in Philadelphia in August of 2000. Mr. Ottman went to the Treasury representing the Arab American Business and Professional Association, but he also serves on the board of Amana Mutual Funds Trust, an investment firm founded by M. Yaqub Mirza, the Northern Virginia businessman who set up most of the entities targeted by the Treasury and whose tax records were sought in the raid. Also at the meeting was Khaled Safouri, head of the Islamic Institute, a group he co-founded with GOP activist Grover Norquist to organize conservative Muslims on behalf of the GOP. The Institute has accepted $20,000 in contributions from another Grove Street entity suspected of terrorist connections, the Safa Trust, as earlier reported by Newsweek. Skipping down. The meeting reflects the increasing complexity of the Bush administration's crackdown on terror financing. As the global investigation broadens, the labyrinthine money trail is leading to more and more seemingly mainstream entities generating political controversy. Some of the people targeted in the March 20th raids in Virginia are well-established figures in the U.S. Muslim community, and their treatment has generated an intense backlash against the Bush administration. Similar controversies have erupted both in the Arab world and in Europe as governments have frozen assets at the behest of the U.S. without disclosing detailed evidence to support the moves. The case also highlights conflicts between the Bush administration's domestic political goals and its war on terror. GOP officials began courting the U.S. Muslim community intensely in the late 1990s, seeking to add that ethnic bloc to the party's political base. Skipping down. The Islamic Institute declared itself pleased with the encounter. The meeting was constructive, and the leaders expressed their concerns to Secretary O'Neill regarding the insensitive actions of Treasury agents during the raids against the Muslim American organizations and concerns of the community that civil rights violations occurred, the Islamic Institute said on its website. Secretary O'Neill promised that these concerns would be investigated, unquote. Bruce Zagaris, an asset forfeiture lawyer who represents clients in similar cases, said a meeting between Treasury officials and anyone who might be associated with the entity under investigation is very unusual. Quote, "It's virtually impossible to arrange such a meeting, especially with the Treasury Secretary," Mr. Zagaris said. "It's very difficult to even get phone calls returned," unquote. Two nonprofits affiliated with Yaqub Mirza and named in the search warrant, the SAR Foundation and the Heritage Education Trust Incorporated, held large blocks of shares in Amana's mutual funds in 1997, according to SEC records. The SEC documents and other records detailing connections between Mr. Ottman and Mr. Norquist's Islamic Institute and the raided groups were compiled by the National Security News Service, a Washington-based nonprofit research group. Mr. Ottman, who parenthetically gave a Muslim benediction at the Republican convention in the summer of 2000, continuing, Mr. Ottman has ties to the Bush family going back to the 1980s when he served with George W. Bush on the board of a Texas petroleum firm, Herkin Oil and Gas Incorporated. Mr. Ottman has visited the White House during the administrations of both President Bush and his father, George H.W. Bush. Mr. Ottman also is a longtime campaign donor who gave to both parties but tends to favor Republicans, giving more than $10,000 during the past decade to GOP groups and supporting the presidential bids of both Bushes. Mr. Ottman also is on the board of Mr. Safouri's Islamic Institute, the GOP-leaning group that received $20,000 from the Safa Trust, one of the raid's targets. The president of the Safa Trust, Jamal Barzinji, is a former business associate of Switzerland-based investor Youssef Nada, whose assets were frozen last fall after the Treasury designated him a person suspected of giving aid to terrorists. A naturalized American, Mr. Barzinji serves as an officer of at least three other Virginia groups listed in the search warrant. Ms. Luke, who represents Mr. Barzinji, denied that he supports terrorists. That is his attorney. By the way, I'm shocked. I'm sure she would have said, of course he supports terrorists. By the way, again, note that in addition to Mr. Barzinji, Mr. Salah is also an associate of Al-Taqwa, and they have these organizations have strong interlocking directorates. Continuing. Mr. Barzinji and his Herndon business partners also are active political givers, donating about $40,000 to federal candidates since 1990. Barzinji also is listed on federal records as a client of the lobbying firm Janus Merit Strategies, LLC, which formerly employed Mr. Norquist, the GOP activist who co-founded the Islamic Institute. By the way, again, Youssef Nader worked for German intelligence in World War II, has Ahmed Huber on his board of directors. Al-Taqwa was alleged in a San Francisco Chronicle article of March 12th of this year to have been founded by François Genoux, one of the most important Third Reich operatives and an obvious operative of the Bormann organization. I would note that the co-chairman of the board of the Saudi investment company, about which we're going to hear more in a minute, Baudin Dunant, was an attorney for François Genoux in the early 1980s. Now, Talat Otman and Harkin Oil. We're going to take a look now at an article from September and October of 1992. This specifically comes from Mother Jones magazine. This article is by Stephen Pizzo, the tri-author of Inside Job, along with Paul Muolo and Mary Fricker, one of the best books about the looting of the savings and loan. This is from the Mother Jones website at www.motherjonesoneword.com. It's called Bush Family Values, subtitled The Bush Clan's Family Business, and it talks about the elder George Bush and the business dealings of his three sons. Talking about Harkin Energy and links to the Nugenhand Bank, that was a U.S. intelligence operation run by Task Force 25 with strong links to the milieu of Edwin Wilson, very many operatives of U.S. intelligence and narcotics trafficking, and the destabilization of the Gough Whitlam Labor Party government in Australia. Talking of Harkin Energy and its antecedents, Harkin Energy was formed in 1973 by two oil men who would benefit from a successful covert effort to destabilize Australia's Labor Party government, which had attempted to shut out foreign oil exploration. A decade later, Harkin was sold to a new investment group headed by New York attorney Alan G. Quasha, Q-U-A-S-H-A, a partner in the firm of Quasha, Wesley & Schneider. Quasha's father, a powerful attorney in the Philippines, had been a staunch supporter of then-President Ferdinand Marcos. William Quasha had also given legal advice to two top officials of the notorious Nugenhand Bank in Australia, a CIA operation. After the sale of Harkin Energy in 1983, Quasha became a director and chairman of the board. Under Quasha, Harkin suddenly absorbed Junior's struggling Spectrum 7 operation in 1986. The merger immediately opened a financial horn of plenty and reversed Junior's fortunes, but like his brother Jeb, Junior seemed unconcerned about the characters who were becoming his benefactors. And skipping down of Talat Otman, talking about a deal in which Harkin Energy basically cornered the offshore drilling rights from off of Bahrain. Through the Bahrain deal, the ties between BCCI and Harkin Energy grew tighter. Sheikh Khalifa, the Prime Minister of Bahrain and brother of the Emir, was also a shareholder in BCCI, and it was Khalifa who played the key role in selecting Harkin for the job. Sheikh Abdullah Bakshish, in turn, was a business associate of BCCI frontman Gayit Faron. He bought a chunk of Harkin's stock and placed his representative, Talat Otman, on Harkin's board of directors. Talat Otman, a representative of Gayit Faron, one of the top officials with the BCCI, strongly linked to Iran-Contra operations, drug trafficking, the financing of terrorism, and also the funding of the Afghan Mujahideen in the anti-Soviet effort of the 1980s.
That, again, from For the Record 356. For this amazing bicycle ride that we're going to be dealing with, again, going in one direction, back to the past, back to the Iran-Contra affair, back to the September 11th attacks, and also the underground Reich and coming forward to what we are being told is, quote, Russiagate, unquote. Actually, deals with the op that put some of the OUNB successor organizations in power in Ukraine. It goes back to the House of Habsburg, and it goes to Liechtenstein. Remember, the bank Alpaqua was incorporated in Liechtenstein, and a distant relative of Prince Hans Adam, and again, the House of Liechtenstein, is a subsidiary or annex of the House of Habsburg. That will hopefully become clearer and take shape in our next program or two. Remember the bank Alpaqua. More about that in just a second. Interestingly, the article that you heard excerpted there from the Wall Street Journal of April 18th, 2002, is not available online. You're going to have to go to a library if you can find it there. And I don't think that excising of that article. Again, other articles you can find from the Wall Street Journal's webpage. Not that one. And it is, only a summary of it exists in the LexisNexis database as well. An earlier article about that from the Wall Street Journal of March 22nd of 2002. Funds under terror probe flowed from offshore. This by Glenn R. Simpson. And some of this, speaking of the companies that were linked to the firms and individuals raided in the March 20th, 2002 raids. These include Alpaqua Management, a recently liquidated Swiss company the U.S. government believes acted as a banker for Osama bin Laden's al-Qaeda terrorist network. Two people affiliated with the companies and charities are linked by records to entities already designated as terrorists by the U.S. government. Hisham al-Talib, who served as an officer of SAR, S-A-A-R, all caps, the International Institute of Islamic Thought, and Safa Trust Incorporated, another Mirza charity during the 1970s, was an officer of firms run by Youssef M. Naba, records show. Mr. Naba is a Switzerland-based businessman whose assets have been frozen by the U.S. for alleged involvement in terrorist financing and is alleged by U.S. officials to be a key figure in the Taqwa network. Skipping down. Jamal Barzinji, an officer of Mr. Mirza's company, Marjak, and other entities, was also involved with Mr. Nava's companies in the 1970s, according to bank documents from Liechtenstein. Again, note Liechtenstein. And more about that. In that excerpt of the article from the Journal, the Wall Street Journal, from March 22nd of 2002. Now, quickly, about Youssef Nava, the head of the bank Alpaqua, again, along with Nasruddin Industries and Aesop Trust, incorporated in Liechtenstein. From Dollars for Terror, the United States and Islam by Richard LaBarrière, published in softcover by Algora Publishing in 2000, Youssef Nava is even better known to the Egyptian intelligence services, who have evidence of his membership in the armed branch of the fraternity of the Muslim Brothers in the 1940s. At the time, according to the same sources, he was working for the Abwehr under Admiral Canaris and took part in a plot against King Farouk. This was not the first time that the path of the Muslim Brothers crossed that of the servants of the Third Reich. So please note the Third Reich intelligence background, according to Egyptian intelligence, of Youssef Nava. And again, remember that François Genoux was a driving force behind the bank Alpaqua. In For the Record 456, there is a compendium on the Nazi and fascist links to September 11th. And you can examine some of these at greater length. People like Ahmed Huber and or Alfred Huber, nay, Alfred Huber and others in the bank Alpaqua. Now, again, a lot of this goes back to, at one level, September 11th. Mohammed Atta and company entered into the U.S. apparently. Mohammed Atta was shipped from Egypt into Germany and then ultimately apparently sponsored into the U.S. through the auspices of the Carl Duisberg Society or Carl Duisberg Gesellschaft. From their website, History of the Carl Duisberg Society, this is inextricably linked with the German-American industrial and financial connections that we went into in Uncle Sam and the Swastika and related programs in that long miscellaneous archive series. In the 1920s, Carl Duisberg, general director of Bayer AG in Germany, one of the most important of the member companies of IG Farben, parenthetically, envisioned sending German students to the U.S. on work-study programs. Duisberg was convinced that international practical training was critical to the growth of German industry. Many of the returning trainees later rose to prominent positions at AEG, that's German General Electric, Bayer, Bosch, Daimler-Benz, and Siemens, bringing with them new methods for mass production, new ideas, and new business practices. Parenthetically, this was in the Second World War. This is at the core of German heavy industry and chemical production for World War II. Continuing, following World War II, alumni from the first exchanges founded the Carl Duisberg Gesellschaft, or CDG, in 1949 to help engineers, businessmen, and farmers gain international work experience for the rebuilding of Germany. And Mohammed Atta, after graduating with a degree in architecture from his Wikipedia site, joined the Muslim Brotherhood-affiliated Engineers Syndicate organization. Then, under the auspices of the Carl Duisberg Society, he comes to the U.S. He goes to work at Huffman Aviation in Southern California, at which pilots from Avcon, the SECO airline subsidiary, are also trained. Chairman of the board of SECO is Baldin Dumont, a friend of, protege of, and attorney for the aforementioned François Genoux. 498, and for the record, 498 and 499, we explored Baudin Dunant's links to this nexus. He also set up many of the companies that were used to channel money to the Afghan Mujahideen who were fighting the former Soviet Union. Now, we're going to go back to, for the record, 761, and before that, to, for the record, 484. The heavy lifting on the overlapping flight schools and intelligence and drug smuggling linked airlines in southern Florida was done by Daniel Hopsicker and detailed in his book Welcome to Terrorland. In an interview with Daniel Hopsicker, for the record 484, and excerpted in for the record 761, we went into Atta's connections in southern Florida, and he was associated with Germans, Austrians, and Schweizerdeutsch, that is, Swiss citizens of German extraction. And according to the BKA, the Bundeskriminalamt, the German equivalent of the FBI, he was associated, he was hanging out with, associating with the sons, and in one case, the daughter of prominent German industrialists. This is from, again, for the record, 761, and before that, from, for the record, 484.
Speaking about Richard Boelke, a partner with Rudy Deckers and Wally Hilliard in the abortive Florida Air, whose only personage seems to have been Catherine Harris, who endorsed this phantom airline, on page 233, you write, "Who had Rudy Deckers and company been working for? We didn't know anyone you could just walk up to and ask. Maybe we got a clue from Mike Pickett, the aviation executive who had watched Rick Boelke with the same amazement with which aviation professionals in Florida watched Deckers. Quote, when Boelke came in, he was just a restaurateur at the Gig Harbor Airport, he said. Again quoting, Then he became the general manager for a German named Volker, a German industrialist buying up all the land in that area. More Germans. Jessica Daly, an attractive airline professional in her late 20s, worked for Rick Bohlke at Harbor Air and later transferred and worked for Rudy Deckers at Florida Air. While Harbor Air was going under, Bohlke told Jessica to fly down to Florida and see Rudy. Quote, "When I walked into his, Rudy's office, he was yelling and screaming at people," she recalled. Again quoting, he said, "People call me a bastard Nazi because I'm loud and I'm German and I'm very demanding," unquote. Deckers told her he was German and not Dutch, Jessica said. Whether he was originally German or Dutch, what this brings to mind is one of the other very striking aspects of your investigation, Daniel, is that even though you're in Florida, you're investigating Arabs, people who were able to work with impunity at protected flight schools, which appear to be dummy fronts for various kinds of activity, including intelligence-related and drug smuggling activity. And yet, even though you're in Florida, one of the groups of people you keep coming across are Germans. And Mohammed Atta appears to, in many ways, have traveled within a German national milieu down there in Florida. Who is Timothy Hupfeld, one of his associates? Fill us in a little bit about Timothy Hupfeld.
Well, seven of Atta's closest associates were German, and we got their names and learned why each had been in Florida, ostensibly, but I wasn't able to get too far into who they were. In fact, I got contacted by the German FBI, the BKA, whatever that agency is, and gave them their names, and so they know more about them than I do. They were we're looking at the sons, and in one case, the daughter of German industrialists, basically.
And these are
seven individuals. I've got the names of seven individuals that Otto hung out with and went to meetings with while he was in Florida.
That again from, for the record, 761, and for the record, 484. With Atta having come into the U.S. courtesy of the Carl Duisberg Society, associated with, by the way, the Alpha Fellowship. We'll talk more about that next week because that goes back to there. That is a function of the Alpha conglomerate, and we're going to talk about Alpha next week and probably in the week after that as well. The manifestations of the remarkable and deadly Borman Flight Capital Network, I think, can be seen. That is the element that I feel will prove to be the decisive factor in human affairs on this planet. I've spoken about that many times, including in For the Record 305. You can read about that in the book Martin Borman, Nazi in Exile by Paul Manning, available for download for free on the SpitfireList.com website. Ultimately, the FBI under Robert Mueller covered up the Operation Green Quest. From the Financial Times of October 23rd of 2003 by Edward Alden, A-L-D-E-N, "Shake up amid war on terror, quote, has hit campaign," unquote. Reads in part, "The U.S. effort to shut down financial support for terrorist networks is being seriously hampered by a government reorganization that has left the most experienced agencies without any real power," the U.S. government's former top counterterrorism official said yesterday. Richard Clark, C-L-A-R-K-E, who headed counterterrorism at the White House for the Clinton and Bush administrations before leaving government earlier this year, said the decision to put the Federal Bureau of Investigation in charge of terror finance investigations, remember, headed up by Robert Mueller, and to give new powers to the Department of Homeland Security, had set the campaign back. Ultimately, it was swept under the rug, and the U.S. government refused to provide documents to the authorities in Europe who were investigating Youssef Nava and the bank Al-Taqwa and related things like Nasruddin Industries and the Aesop Trust. Again, all of those incorporated in Liechtenstein. We will go back into that next week. I've also included an excerpt of text from For the Record 569 from Terrorist Hunter by Rita Katz about how the Operation Green Quest was swept under the rug and elements she believes were CIA and FBI began harassing the investigators into Operation Green Quest instead of the target. And again, the Bureau at this point in time was headed up by that very, very, very special prosecutor, Robert Mueller. This concludes For the Record program number 1006. Robert Mueller and the subversion of Operation Green Quest being recorded on May 2nd of the year 2018. My name is Dave Emery. Have fun.